Almost 20 years ago, when I was preparing to go to serve at Blakemore, just down the street, I hadn't even been there for a Sunday yet, and I was informed that I was to teach the older adult class. I wasn't invited, okay? I wasn't requested, I was informed. Well, that's okay. It was the expectation. I showed up on that morning. It was a fairly full class at that time. During the 8 years I was there, I saw that class dwindle, number by number by number, and person by person by person, and I did services for all of those folks. By then, they had become my friends, so that by the time I left, it was a much smaller class. But on that very first day, we were just getting acquainted. We were getting to know each other. So I was taking some questions, and an older gentleman in the back raised his hands, and he said, "Are you going to sing songs we know? Are you going to sing these new songs?" And I said, "Well, you know, I actually don't know what songs you know, but I bet if you look around the room, different people know some different songs. And since you're a member of a Sunday school class, I can only assume that you're interested in learning new things." So we'll probably sing some songs that you know, and we'll probably sing some new ones as well. Well, that only worked partially with him, but you know, we do have those songs that are important to us, and most of the time it's not because of their theological meaning, and it's not because of the beauty of the poetry. Many times it's because we remember standing next to a parent or a grandparent and hearing those songs sung even before we could read the words, which of course sometimes leads to some misunderstandings and misinterpretations. Like the child who asked her mom to sing the hymn about the bear. And her mother said, "I don't know a hymn about a bear." She said, "Oh, yeah, you do. We sing it at church. Gladly, the cross-eyed bear." Or sing the song about Andy. Now, you all know the song about Andy, right? Andy walks with me. Andy talks with me. Andy tells me I'm his own. Well, pretty soon all that gets straightened out, but you know what? Those songs still continue to live inside us and shape us and make us who we are. Now, the writer of Ephesians knows that. We've already talked about how the emphasis in the book is on the unity of the body of Christ. How do we pull together? How do we bear each other's burdens? How do we support each other? How do we speak to each other and interact, especially in this time of present darkness? Or as in this passage it says, the time is evil. The image that comes through very strongly in that book is that all around us there is hatred and destruction and exclusion. And yet the body of Christ is supposed to be different from that. So how do we do that? How do we cultivate that oneness? Well, a part of it is in sharing songs. And that's exactly the remedy that's proposed in today's text. Don't get drunk on wine, it says, but be filled with the Spirit. Well, we know what happens when people are filled with the Spirit. We read about that at Pentecost, didn't we? And people thought they were drunk, didn't they? And I love Peter's reasoning. No, we couldn't be drunk. It's only 9 in the morning. He didn't say check back later. To be filled with the Spirit is not to be intoxicated, because that means you're taking in a toxin, a poison. To be filled with the Spirit is to be enthused, in theos, filled with God. Do you know that's what enthusiasm means? To be filled with God. We are enthused in our singing sometimes. I watch you all out there, and not everybody's as enthused as everybody else. But we are to be filled with God's Spirit as we sing. And we are to sing songs and hymns and spiritual songs. In fact, a recent translation says, speak to each other in songs and hymns and spiritual songs. That's the way we are to communicate, through these images and through this music. Now, as I was growing up, I had a number of friends from the Church of Christ, and I know this was a text that was important for them, at least, in terms of interpreting why they didn't have instrumental music in their churches. But you know, I also noticed something else. I noticed that those were the kids who could sing harmony without looking at a line of music, in part because they had stood next to parents and grandparents, and they had learned how to sing in parts early on. For as long as they could remember, they could do that. They just knew, I can't do that. I can't do that. Even though my interpretation of that text is different from theirs, listen, something good came out of that. Something that I can't do. That's how we support each other. That's how we learn from each other. It's not just the stories we share. They are important. It's the songs we share. It's the music we share. It's the music we carry with us in our bodies and in our hearts. The vibrations that live in our bodies, the images that live in our imaginations, those are what we carry with us that make us who we are. Some years later, while I was still at Blakemore, my mom came to live with us because my dad was having open heart surgery at St. Thomas. And my mom had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's a few years before. We had to put signs on the doors to say, you're at Mike's house, don't leave. We had to have somebody with her all the time. There was a lot that she couldn't remember. She certainly couldn't keep up with her medicine. She couldn't keep up with whether she had eaten. She couldn't keep up with whether she had taken a shower. But sometimes, on a Wednesday night or a Friday night, our bluegrass band, the Blakemore Boys, would play. And we would take my mom to that, and she would sit there, and as they sang the old gospel hymns, she sang along and knew every word. Now, studies have been done to show that folks with various kinds of dementia can remember songs more quickly than they can any other form of communication, and especially those songs they learned when they were young. Music doesn't disappear in the same way that other kinds of learning might, because it lives in our bodies. Our bodies remember even when our minds can't. Isn't that a miracle? Isn't that a wonderful thing? And every Sunday, we get to infuse our bodies enthusiastically with those vibrations, with that music. I was listening to NPR this past week, and there was an interview with some physicians who had done studies, I think primarily in England, on the use of music to reduce pain, post-operative pain and other kinds of pain. What they found was that music could be used to reduce pain up to 2 levels, which is as good as certain pain medications can do without the side effects. So you're asking, okay, what music is it? Give us this music. It's whatever music you love. It's the music you carry around in your body. It is whatever has formed you musically that will help alleviate that pain. There's not a particular type that works better than another. Isn't that a miracle? Isn't that a wonder that the music that lives in our bodies can do that, can affect our bodies in those ways? I think Ephesians is here to remind us that in a world that seems set upon destroying itself and others, in a world that seems fueled by hatred and exclusion, in a world that clearly could today be described as this present darkness or a time that is evil, if you just look around, it's not hard to see that. All you have to do is watch the news. that in a time like that, we as followers of Jesus have a particular song to sing. And it's a song that we learn here in community. And it's a song that lives in our bodies and forms us as the people we are. And it's a song that we can sing in the world as our witness. That is our witness. So I want to leave you with one particular image. Years ago, when the Serbs and the Croats and other groups within the Balkan states were fighting each other, were living out ancient hatreds. Isn't that interesting how quickly love dissolves and how long hatred hangs on? Living out ancient hatreds, killing each other, trying to destroy people who had been their neighbors at one point simply because they had a different language, were of a different ethnicity. And there was a single cellist who would walk out into the streets of Sarajevo, open his case, take out his cello, put his chair in the midst of destroyed buildings, in the midst of streets where there were huge holes from the blasts. You could hear the artillery in the distance, and he would play. He would simply take out his cello, and he would play. He would go away, and then again he would appear in another place, and he would play. It was his witness against the hatred, the destruction, the hurt, the exclusion that was going on all around him. Isn't that who we are as followers of Jesus? Aren't we that cellist? Aren't we the ones who have the music that you take out into a world bent on destroying itself? And wherever we go, we might not be able to rebuild those buildings, but we have a song to sing, and it's our calling to sing it. And my friends, I don't believe there is a higher calling.